we're talking about how to help Holden be more multicultural. I didn't get to sit in. I was playing with my two grandnephews tonight at 7 o'clock and didn't get to sit in on Jody's session. How many of you were at Jody's session? So, good number of you. Well, you can help us out by reminding Jody what he said.
That would be helpful.
Whatever. That was sort of designed to play into this. As Jody told me, he talked of it largely from a secular perspective of what was happening around this nation. And would we be saying that in addition to all of that, and that reading of the scene and the dilemma, as far as I'm concerned, for racism in this country, which I don't know what he said, but I assume is getting worse, in my experience at least, add to that the call of the church to be the gospel of Christ being lived out in all nations. That's been in the mind of people, the minds of people that have been at Holden since I can remember. I remember Carol Hinderly in earliest days talking about these things. Out of his experience in the Southeast during World War II, and certainly in other kinds of ways as well. And it certainly was during the time that John was here, John Schramm, and has been again during these days. We've always tried to try and have people other than white here, or in addition to white people here. After a while, we can ask Rudy, because he's been on the board for so many years, about the various efforts that are made. And what we have tried to do is try once again, maybe in a little different tack, to say that it's going to be experimental, and it's going to be focused on people that we know, first of all, to try and get them to come and be with us, and that it's going to take a long time. Both the board and our program staff was convinced those are worthwhile things doing. There's some problems involved, obviously. There's a sense in which we are making use of our black friends. I suppose why some who are black who are not with us tonight. We need them at Holden much more than they need us. In many ways, Holden is not part of their experience. And so we're asking them to help us. We're cold turkey coming to them and saying, we think it's a good place for you to be. We think there'll be good things that happen here, but really we need you to help us understand folks who are different from us, living in the midst of us, help us to find ways of overcoming our distancing and prejudice, and indeed to help us to learn how we can make this place a learning place for others. It's still amazing, to some of us at least, that many of our folks who come here on staff have seldom or maybe never had an occasion to live or work or know folks other than their own background, and often not black folks. How does the church help that process? So rather than being, they still say it's the most segregated hour during the week on Sunday morning. And if that's true, how do we help in a place like this to overcome that? So I suppose we say we're working our buns off to get black people here and cajoling them and whatever else. Barry has been heading that from Holden's point of view, and he may not use the word cajole, but that's a heck of a lot of letters that he has written and phone calls that he has made and requests, and we invest some funds in it. We have funds from a standing fund and funds set aside by the trust board and trustees to be spent in helping people come here who may not be able to afford it, or some people, frankly, who can't afford it, whom we ask to come here and help pay some of their way in getting here. We think the end product, so let me say one more thing and ask him to jump in, and we see this as a start for more than just black involvement. We decided to start with the people that we knew better than others. I don't know a lot of Hispanic people. I don't know a lot of Asian people who are related to the church. I do not know a lot of Native Americans, although I know people who know all of them. I think that was true for many of us, but we did know a good number of black people who are related to some Christian church and probably especially the Lutheran church. So we started there. But we want that to be also inclusive of other people. And I just mentioned Hispanics and Native Americans and Asians as well, so that we can be living out the kind of world that everybody does live in, whether we admit it or not. And especially, what am I getting to be a grandfather? Especially for our children. I don't usually say that, because I think it's for all of us. But also for our children and grandchildren, that they learn better how to live. I didn't have any black friends growing up, or friends of anything other than the German Lutheran neighborhood I grew up in. And that was, I think that was tragic. I surely knew who Joe Louis was, but that was about it, you know. And black people lived nearby. They lived in Maywood, Illinois. That's all of a mile and a half from where I grew up, and I still didn't know any people. So we think that there's a call to do that, to broaden our Lutheran experience and our white experience, to be inclusive of others, with the idea that we will learn more about God and about the church and about being human and about being people who live in this kind of a world. It is a world. It's a globe. It isn't anymore our little ghetto. The ELCA and anything else which is terribly important in one sense is terribly unimportant in another sense. And we want to add them. What make our contribution short of that. Enough.
Okay, let me just say three brief things, Elmer. I think that just to complement some of the things that you put off with, one of them personal, one of them institutional, and one of them a little bit about Holden. I think that Elmer and I share on the personal level, from our long Chicago days, something that some of you may have too, which is an immense sense of almost inexpressible gratitude to our friends in the black community for expanding what our vision of both human potential and Christian faith is. I know that for me, the dryness and aridity of Lutheranism drove me from the church. And I was brought back into the church by an experience of the depth and resonance of black people's faith. It was that simple. Without that, I would still be at miles distance from the institutional church. They didn't come out to save me, but they are who they are in the American experience. And they are who they are in the American church experience as well. So my just 6 weeks, really, for the first time, 6 weeks in Mississippi in 1964, in the midst of a people of faith that I had never experienced anything like before, and then in the subsequent 25 years, continues to build in me ties of respect and sort of continuing studenthood in the face of black folks, and particularly black folks in the religion community. I think we share that probably. Elmer commuted for years from far south mm-hmm. of Chicago into a predominantly black church, I think, primarily because of that same set of feelings. Institutionally, it's an exciting time for American Protestantism, it seems to me. I don't know the Catholic Church as well institutionally, but lots of Protestant bodies, it seems to me, in the late 1980s, are reawakening to multicultural realities. And it's certainly true of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The new ELCA, one of the things, is to get semi-parochial here for just a second, one of the things that makes the ELCA slightly new and not just another church bureaucracy is the existence of an institutionalized effort to be multicultural. They have created at the church headquarters national level here a commission on multicultural ministries, which is a marvelous and interesting model, it seems to me. It's an attempt to bring together leadership from the black, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, and white as an equal communities. hear that now, not the four minority so-called communities reporting to the white boss, but a part of the church where there are five equal cultural bodies trying to figure out what whiteness then means in the context of multicultural ministry. Seems to me that's an absolutely profound challenge, which we'll be dealing with, I think, some in the next 10 days. As particularly the Lutheran Church, but I think other church bodies, are looking anew then at what it means to be out of a white European tradition in a world which is now 90% people of color, right? Only 10% European and European extraction. What does that mean for us? In that kind of context, a place like Holden, which has always attempted both to be multicultural, but in the broader sense, to be an umbrella under the gospel which allows Christians to deal with the emerging questions where faith and world intersect. What does a place like Holden do? So it's an exciting time, it seems to me, for Holden in the context of the larger institutional church. Finally, just a word or two introductorily about Holden and the difficulty. Ingrid and I have worked hard at this. Elmer's worked hard at this. Lots of our black friends have worked hard at this. Barry Shelley's worked hard at this. It's rough. Let me just tell you about a couple of reasons, I think. Black experience in the United States is southern, rural, and big city. It's pretty, there's no mystery about this, right? This is neither southern, if we look around here, this is neither southern, rural, nor is it big city. Right? So it is a totally alien setting for most black Americans to even think about coming to. Right? That combined with, I think, the fact that the setting sort of symbolizes, encapsulates a variety of things which are really thought about not only as white and not southern or urban, but basically Nordic, right? Out of a particular set of white ethnic traditions, makes it difficult, not only geographically in terms of their own culture, but just in terms of asking the questions about whether or not this is worth the effort. not only, the geographic and travel effort, but the effort to come and encounter this culture. This is not only a white culture up here, but it's a specific, you know, version of a white culture. And it's a white culture that's at some distance removed from the experience of black people in the United States. And for that matter, really, except for Native American peoples, the experience of all other peoples of color in the United States, which is and one of the things we may want to talk about here tonight, and we've certainly been thinking about it a lot over the last few years here, is what is peculiarly white about Holden. You know, we are like fish in water. We swim in this place, and we don't notice how white it is and how white every little gesture and part of it is. From the bell ringing and the clocks, to food, to the way people interact. You know, it's all...
To the clothes we wear.
To the clothes we wear,
sure.
All as white as the snow in January. So, thinking about a multicultural Holden is in part thinking about a different Holden. Thinking about a different Holden. That's both exciting and incredibly risky, it seems to me. So it's an invitation once more as Christians under the gospel to take some risks, and that's really exciting. So that's all I have to say.
Go out with good courage.
Absolutely.
So
what do we got to do here? What's
reactions, comments, whatever?
Well, we're at a disadvantage because we don't know what you've done. I mean, I would think you'd approach it the same way you approach to any other congregation or any other group that you would like to have come here. For example, if you want people to come here, you go out and you tell them about Holden Village. And I would think that the black congregations, for example, in Chicago, which I know there are several, you would go and show slides and do exactly what we've done in our church to get people to come here. I would also think if you wanted to invite, like we have this prayer gathering with whom we have here this week, we have a tremendous black Baptist swing, jazz, type gospel, I don't know what it is, they're incredible. They sang in our church one time in a duo concert with a choir from Sweden. and it was the most exciting, electrifying thing I have ever seen. They ended up singing out on the steps of the church. People wouldn't let them go home. I mean, the two combined choirs, it was incredible. There was just an electricity in the air. Now, you could invite a group like this up here.
Surely have done it. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to let that choir plan the next five Sundays? At your church?
At my church? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love it. I think most people in my church would.
Great.
Good.
Great.
Because that's what will happen here. They'll take over the plan. It will no longer be White Plant or Holden Plant. It will be Black Plant. How long will you sit still for it?
You should clarify, they won't take over.
They invited it, but that's why I said, would you give them the right to take over and plan? They'll run the services for the next 5 weeks.
Great.
Then fine. That's great.
I feel, you know, as strong as we can get as trying to get people to come up here and working with them, Barry writing letters, I think we're really fooling ourselves in a way that unless we get somebody in a minority position, in a position here at Holden of a status or whatever,
sure,
that we really, like you say, conscientiously don't think of, you know, that we just go by and we work and we believe in it and we try to get minorities up here, but unless there's somebody, associate pastor or accounting or whatever, whatever it is, but to raise our level of consciousness a little bit higher and to concentrate on that.
The thing that bothers me about that, Daryl, is that unless that person has freedom to change it, to become more Black, not just occupying a position, but as what you mean, then I think that's fine.
Well, whether it's Black or Native American or Hispanic,
whoever.
I mean, we don't have to, just any of those type to get in here and help, like I say, raise the level of consciousness with us. And it's something else as WASPs or whatever you want to call, to work and try to get these groups up here. But yet to have somebody else who is, within their race, helping, and in the position to help make decisions. I think Holden, we're progressive, but we're spinning our wheels, I think, in a lot of ways without that kind of.
But see, why would anybody come? Why wouldn't anybody Black come to be on staff here?
Why wouldn't they? I mean.
Because why? It's all White. I want to be with Blacks.
Well, then that's, to me, the type of person that isn't. I mean, we come up here and we try to to understand all facets of.
But you're still coming to a mostly White place. What if this room was filled with?
Because 50, for somebody who would want to make the changes as well as we do, and as far as changing Holden and our ideas, somebody who wants to work
from their point of view, that's a real tough assignment.
I know it is. I mean, and it's easy for me to sit here and say that also, but I'm just saying that I feel, unless we do, it's going to be really hard to change Holden.
See, what I feel you're asking is that they should do the hard part, and we will do the easy part. They'll make the big jump into this, and in an all-white society, there'll be one person, two, three people, whatever it may be, and then you have to be nice and calm. I can relate to you about that.
Well, I don't believe in anything that you do. If you can't meet 50-50 halfway, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Whether in this program or a marriage or whatever it is,
sure,
that we've got to meet halfway. And I just feel as that we need somebody.
Just two quick reports, Daryl, about for both of the Rainbow years, what we've done is to put together a planning committee and really do it under the direction of Black folks in the church, so that the major planners, in terms of figuring out the program in particular for the 10-day period, have been folks from the Black community. The idea of Rainbow in the first place was partly, I think, to address what Elmer was saying in response to you, that is that there is probably some kind of a critical mass, that is, it's necessary for an institution as White as Holden to create some kind of safe boundaries some kind of way of saying to folks, look, we know we're white. You know, here's a period, though, of the year where we're going to do the best we can, as inadequate as it probably is, to make it safe for a larger number of folks to come up here, and you're not going to be one or two or three people in 400 up here. There will be some support. You won't be left out on a limb by yourself. I think I sort of agree with Elmer that it's going to be a long time before we'll get too many black applicants for long-term staff up here. But no, who knows? It could happen.
To kind of look for them, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Amen.
What's the purpose? What's the goal? You mean you want to integrate the staff, or you want to have an experience with a black community? You know, why jump immediately that you have to share power and you have to have a black staff member? You know, what's the purpose?
Because I want to learn from them, and I don't think you learn as long as they're subservient.
If they're presenting the program, that means they're subservient?
No, if they're not in control of what happens at the place.
I don't mean
control by, you know, one person, one black person running everything, but somebody in a significant enough position so it does reflect their point of view. Eventually. Right now, we're delighted that people are coming up. They all were guests and came and just took jacuzzis, I'd be glad, you know. But I'm saying, trying to look at it from their point of view, why don't people come, and what's the hesitation? Why is it so difficult? I think it is the kind of stuff that we're dealing with. It's still that they are tokens, you know, that come in. And we're trying to get to the point, if we're going to learn from each other well, that some of that has to be alleviated from our point of view and then, you know, from theirs. I think what helps them is the group. If you can have 50, 60 people here, they're going to feel better about being here. And from our point of view, just finding the ways in which we signal to them that we aren't just using, as I said before, I think.
What was the experience last year as far as numbers that came and what happened? And then what is the experience this year as far as how many people are coming and how many slots you, whatever you want to call it, you know, how many people you hope to come or whatever?
I think the numbers last year and this year will be about the same. 50, 60, 70 black folks, I think, at various points during Rainbow came through last year, and that'll be about what happens this year as well. Some of them are repeats, the second year back. Others are new folks. Like everything else, though, in a place like Holden, what really operates is the networks of personal contacts. You know, that's what's important. So that good experiences last year, which I think were virtually universal, but tough. I mean, it was not easy for either black or white folks last year, but it was, I think, in many people's experience, a marvelous time at the end, with lots of tears and struggles, which is, I think, a sign of real success. I think that we're feeling pretty good about the way in which the network is building itself. There will be some second-timers in the program as well this summer, but over half the program staff, people doing music and sessions and so forth, will be different as well. We'll have visitors here from the new Multicultural Commission of the ELCA, from the particularly the Asian and Hispanic portions of that, sort of as participant observers, thinking about how their communities in the Asian and Hispanic parts of Lutheranism, at least, and maybe beyond that, could use Holden in the future in some way. So those are sort of the elements. It's a struggle. I think, you know, some of the lesson is that the personal contact is so important. It's just, it's hard to do it by letter, without phones, from Holden. No, isn't it, Barry?
Barry. Where are most of these people coming from?
New York, Detroit, Columbus, Chicago,
Seattle,
San Diego, Seattle, Tacoma, Oakland, some more.
They're in itself, Holden is a difficult place to get to.
You bet.
We all know that. To maybe to get programs with people in local areas, the Hispanics and Wenatchee, the Native Americans also in this area, to work stronger with that and to integrate and, you know, where it's easier for them and more available to get up here and then try to,
See, what he's saying is that it's all those personal contacts that's made us to get in, to get into the Spanish community, Hispanic community in Wenatchee is a long-term assignment.
Even in Chelan, there's a lot of Hispanics.
For sure. We made the first steps of that this spring, but
that's a long time. We have met one person who's very involved there and invited him up and met with him in Wenatchee. Hopefully he's probably going to come through.
That's
the first step.
Good idea.
Yeah, logical next steps. Lots of great.
I suppose one question I have is just the situation of this forum, which I'm not as leery about it probably as I should be, but I know many of my friends in the Black community get very leery when one talks of a bunch of white folks who get together and discuss how they can make things better for us. Will a forum like this take place during Rainbow Week? Because I think that might be a better time and a better environment to find out how we become multicultural than have.
Oh, absolutely. And not only Blacks,
yeah,
of course, because the Asian friends will say, how come Black people don't speak for me, you know, all that.
You're absolutely right.
So we're doing a white thing tonight, absolutely. And you know, as I've said many times here during the week, all of a sudden I think of my people in Windsor Park Lutheran Church, and I wonder what they would say in the middle of this discussion. You know, and it would usually be pretty much counter what's going on in this session. That's true for tonight, for sure. You know, and I affirm whites doing their thing about this, but it's only when it's really in the context with the other people.
Why are we here doing this?
We thought there was value in, I think there's good thing for us to be here tonight. I think there's value in this kind of discussion, but it doesn't supplant, or it isn't the real discussion that meets with them. And that will be happening during the weeks coming ahead.
In fact, one of the interesting discussions during Rainbow Weeks, at least last summer, and I suppose this summer too, is constantly back and forth between whites and Black folks about, is this going to be a white discussion? Or is this going to be a Black discussion? Or is this going to be Blacks leading a discussion mostly for whites? Or is this going to be a joint discussion? You know, and it really, all of those, the same topic in all of those forms is very different. And all of those are important to have. All of them are.
Oh. It should be an open-ended form.
I just want to add to that. I think it's extreme. Sometimes I think I agree with exactly what Keegan said. On the other side of that at the same time is that we cannot sort of lay our responsibility for dealing with racism on Blacks, and that it's a white problem that we have to deal with. And that doesn't mean that we don't deal with that in different times with people of color. But there is, I think it's very legitimate and even needed for whites to take responsibility for gathering as whites and looking at ways, not ways that we can make a place multicultural so much as look at the ways that we don't make it multicultural and try to take some responsibility for that. Maybe that's what we should, I like your question that we talked about earlier. What is white about?
For instance, volunteering is white, the way we do it. The whole thing is built, this place exists by volunteers. That's white. Clearing your tables together, family style, up here, that's white. The Black doing that goes back to a subservient role. Take the dishes out back, clean it up. There'll be Blacks here who will not clear their table. They'll be sitting with you. Now get up and walk away. I don't pick up dishes. The worship that we do, most obviously, you know, how excruciatingly white it is. And again, I'm not against any of those things. I'm white and I love those things. But those are the signal. He mentioned the bell. Sessions, an hour and rushing off to do something else, or getting out of the dining hall in a hurry. Bible study. Blacks don't have Bible study. Blacks worship. And the Bible is part of it. We brag about the fact we have Bible study every morning. We don't schedule anything opposite. 7:30 for staff, 9 o'clock for you. White. White. All along the line. If we would, in a session like this tonight, just raise the fact of thinking about what is white about us, it seems to me it might give us a better perspective as we go into the weeks with the black people. Not to say, oh boy, I better not do anything white, but to know how white I am in the way I act and think and the way this place acts and thinks.
How about the food planning for next week?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Been talking about it with
some of our... Are blacks a part of that, the ones who are coming?
Yeah, we got some recipes.
From black people.
Some advice from the kitchen that we've been talking about. I think, in fact, some of the folks coming up are planning on doing a little training with some of the cooks and some down-home recipes and everything's kind.
We ask them to order some food that might be better backgrounds for their cooking some meals or leading the cooking of some meals. We don't know. You know, 2 years from now, if we're doing this again or something, when we hope to keep doing it, 2 years now we may know, but boy, we better order da-da-da-da. Right now we're
it's all really a
stumbling
around. Very much experimental at this point to see what's going to happen.
Were there things you learned from last year that you
didn't
this year?
Yeah.
A lot of what Ember just said about what's white about this place is part of the learning of last year.
No, well, I'm just talking meals. Will there be a cultural standard? A nutrition standard? Type of thing. No, I was just thinking of a project that they had in Ethiopia, and it had to do with solar heaters, and absolutely wouldn't go anyplace. They're denuding the country, you know, the desert's encroaching, why? Because we want that social interaction of sitting around the fireplace, even though it's killing the lungs, you know, and people are getting burned, and the country's going downhill, because of it, all that kind of thing. They're not willing to change. Well, that's because that's their experience. Let's make it better. You know, there needs to be some kind of solution to that situation. So,
sure. And just because ours works doesn't make it good. You know, the same way. So that's the kind of discussion that we have to go on. Sure. You know, and when you get into a worship service that doesn't sort of meet your needs and stuff like that, and you feel that way and are able to say that to the people that are leaving the service, you're white and they're black, or vice versa. You know, that's the period of things we're trying to get to. Talk about the differences of appreciation and values of whatever it may be, whether it's food or worship.
How can you get across the whole core of this place, which is a servant theology of the cross, if you have this slavery image and that anything that you do that is servant is not acceptable?
I don't think they would say anything that they would do.
It's just the dishes?
If they would choose, I agree with you. They'll choose their own thing to do in service to others.
As part of the community.
Right, as part of the community. But it's the stereotypical thing that they would have trouble with, you know, just because of their experience in history. Some maybe never did it themselves, but bear marks of it, whatever it may be. It doesn't mean the jump wouldn't be at all that they don't want to volunteer. Our style of doing it is one they would have a question about.
How would they get the dishes cleaned?
Oh, it happens in families, certainly, in lots of different ways. I think, you know, I mean, the leadership of the folks who are coming up for Rainbow don't have the sort of personal reaction that Elmer's talking about, but they're not going to do it because of the symbolism. They're not going to do it as leaders of the black community, and they're not going to do it because of what it says to the white folks around. You know, and they're very aware of the symbolic impact of their acts. And so should we be. Yeah. Absolutely,
I guess
of ours.
You should always make sure that you set white people at spots that are going to have to clear the dishes. You know, maybe consciously do some of that.
And it may be they'll get to a point where they, you know, where the symbol isn't going to be that important.
That's right.
But when last year we had good fat rhubarb about worship, you know, differences of worship, and length of worship, everything else. And we were all packed in this room and had some good discussions. But on like Tuesday night and on Thursday night, Tress Hertzfeld, the black woman who's leading it, has the courage to share in the worship how her first child was murdered by white doctors and nurses in a hospital in Mississippi,
Alabama,
by refusing care for the child that was to be born premature, and by putting the child in a incubator that had no controls working on it, so that the child burned to death. And telling the story with the white nurse, who was the only one at that hospital that was kind to her when they came in. They manhandled her. They threw her body before the premature child was to be born. They threw her body. And one woman, a nurse, was kind to her. And after the child died, she came back. She gave her something. She gave her a quilt,
a blanket
or something. Yeah. And she told this story. The courage it took to do that. And that night, for those moments, we were bound together. We were bound together. So, I mean, you know, the stuff that happened earlier, and she had not told that story often in her life.
No, and certainly never in public.
Never in public. She chose to do that. Now, that's a gift. Incomparable gift. And goes back to who we are as white people. I don't pick up the responsibility from that doctor or whatever who told Will Hertzfeld, get her out of the back door, I don't talk to blacks at the front door, while his wife was ailing in the car. But that's part of what they know and what they remember. And I don't know about you, but I've been treated that way. I'd remember. I'd tell you I'd remember. So the gospel was heard, and that gospel came out of a cross, you're right. The cross that they were bearing in imitation of Jesus Christ.
Then I think we sang Amazing Grace.
That's correct.
I've seldom been in a mostly white audience and heard it sung with as much belief.
So it's black, white, and Holy Spirit working. Truly is. Nobody could have orchestrated that.
It was interesting to watch Tressa direct the choir during that week because she never used music. We went to choir rehearsal, and every night the choir got bigger. It was you know, huge, but we'd go in there.
After the village, we'd go into this choir rehearsal every night.
And she would teach us the music. She'd sing the lines, and we'd, you know, and sometimes some of us in the back were kind of compulsive, would write down the words so we could remember. But, and then we'd know the melody and we'd sing that, and she'd joke about the way we were mispronouncing the words, and she'd school us in black pronunciation. And then we'd be in the middle of singing, she'd say, now do it in harmony. And we would. I mean, we just made up our harmonies, we went along. Never had us any piece of music, and people just loved it. We sang our hearts out. And she'd be in the middle of the service, she'd change the way we'd learned the song, and she'd say, I need to hear it like this, and we'd do it a different way, and we just loved it. But all us sort of straight Lutherans, you know, taught straight music with straight everything. And we got into it. And her gift to us was that her gifts to us were multitudes. But it was different for us. I mean, the first time I went to choir rehearsal, I came in late from dish team, and I assumed that we'd run out of music. Little did I know that the music was just beginning.
And that's really the oral tradition of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That you're
mm-hmm.
talking about.
Sure.
Well, it was real persuasive stuff.
You know, I think Africa, I wonder, the blacks, how much their African tradition is a part of their culture, how much they really know. What isn't it the only, there was no written language in Africa. You know, it's been one that's been imposed from the outside. And somewhere in civilizations, think you need to write things down to be able to communicate. So that's a part of their heritage,
sure,
too.
Sure. Tress and Will have been to Africa numbers of times, so I assume they're not unaware of it, but their tradition of American tradition, certainly, writing, printing books.
One of the elements that will be a little bit different this year is to have with us on the teaching staff a couple of South African exile folks. Johnny Dumasani Kamal used to be director of the American Committee on Africa in New York, really well-known South African exile, probably one of the most articulate explicator of that whole situation in the global context. So that would be fun to begin to think globally about the Black American experience as well as its domestic side.
I sure don't find my friends wanting to be idealized or idolized. They know they've got problems. They know it's tough being human, Black in white society, and that there's a lot of crumb-bum stuff about them and their life because they're human beings, but not unlike ours. They want to be met and respected across the straight lines. I used to preach in that church at Windsor Park. It was...
They let you do that?
It was like a sentence. I've preached in many places. I've been on CBS television and radio and everything else. But nothing is difficult as preaching there. What did I have to say? I should explain to them about suffering. I should explain to them about hope. It was tough. I tell them at the beginning of the sermon, tough. I don't know if I got something to say or not. And they were the people, you know, whose boys were just about guaranteed not getting a job. Maybe ever. How would you grow up with a kid that you knew wasn't going to get any place? And the mothers. It's a quote I use all the time. You can see the woman when she said, if we get our daughters past age 7 without being raped, we're good parents. And that's the people I was preaching to. That's tough stuff. It was from them I learned.
And you go to the Black churches in Chicago, and Jody and I go, and we're welcomed. Not like we do in our Pilgrim Lutheran, where we're all sort of Northern Europeans, and we smile with tight little smiles and nod at the new people that come. But, you know, we walk in the door, and people get up and move over and shake our hands and want to know our names in the middle of the service if we're late, or you know, we're not usually late, but, you know, they just go so far to make us welcome, and they're glad we're there, and at the end they talk and want us to come back.
And they know all about us by the time we leave.
Yeah,
think about how many people that come to our congregations, we know all about them.
And they make our children that laugh and have fun and relax. And then occasionally Black people come to Pilgrim Lutheran on the north side where we live. And it's, you know how we are, and we sort of might encourage, have enough courage to shake your hand and say welcome and pronounce your name, but that's about as far as it goes. But it's not this overflowing spirit of joy and delight to have you there. And at Holden, it's, you know, I worry because we don't have the same hospitality. What does hospitality mean in the Black community? It means something different than it means here. We talk a lot about Holden hospitality, and we care about that, and we want to do it right. But my affect is cold. I'm Northern European, I'm withholding, I'm Norwegian, I'm shut down, I'm not expansive. And people can interpret my meaning well as being cold. So I have to try to extend myself just to be even, just to get sort of up to speed. I have to be much more than I would have to be for Northern Europeans. It's different. It's just different.
But I like the way you are.
Well, thank you.
I sometimes think we tend to diminish our own culture, our own personality, our own origins, because somehow that's bad or not as good as. I think we should.
I don't think it's bad. I just worry about Holden hospitality. I just want people to feel comfortable here, and I know that my way of showing welcome is not
But if people are like you, I'm like you, I get uncomfortable with too much open, gushy kind of thing, so I like the way you are. I think we have to like the way we are sometimes and not be too judgmental of ourselves.
Well, and I think you respond to different people differently. The community I live in is, there are many black people. It's a fairly mixed community, and the black friends that I have, we hug when we see, but when I see my white friends, I don't walk up and hug them. It's just my response to their openness and
I really wished, I believed that whites had trouble not believing in themselves. I don't. I think the problem is much on the other side, that we believe too much in ourselves.
Well, but there's a variant of it, Elmer. I think that this will work sometimes, which is that one of the things we do as white folks is to forget we've got culture.
Oh, yes.
I mean, most of the students we get, Ingrid and I teach in Chicago, who are white, have no idea what their ethnic heritage is, and have no idea sort of who they are culturally. They're sort of generally white Americans. And
that's because we're mongrel. I mean, how do you, if you have half a dozen nationalities within you, which one do you? Mm-hmm. In my family, it's my mother's. That's the one that's come down. But
I think there are an awful lot of at least younger people who are perfectly at home saying, I don't have a culture. Even if it's a mongrel culture, I mean, some a little of this, a little of that, think of themselves as somehow removed from the fact of culture.
Yeah, that I surely agree with.
Well, and I think, too, when the Europeans came here, they tried so hard to get rid of their culture, to be Americans, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So now our culture, a lot of young people's culture is wearing L.L. Bean clothes or whatever this R.A.I. is.
R.E.I.
Or, there's a sort of Holden style, which is shoes like mine and pants like mine and shirt like mine and earrings like mine.
And the blacks will bring dress-up clothes for worship here.
White used to do that too.
Yeah, we say, a hole's a neat place, can you wear anything you want to worship? The black comes and says, that's not the way I like to worship. I like to worship being dressed up. It's my Sunday go to meeting clothes.
Well, that's fine. If I'm comfortable going to worship like this, would they accept me coming like this to what? In the way you're saying, like when we're talking about, say, bring this group, would be their worship service. I mean, I like to think of Holden as being Holden and not being white or black or, I think sometimes Holden, and this is maybe personal, can be so much of an intellectual community that it could scare people away. It could scare me away, it could scare a lot of people I know away.
Sure.
But it doesn't, because I figure, well, I can learn a lot. A lot of people say, well, I don't know what they're talking about. But, like you talk, bringing in, say, this whole choir or this whole room from our town, I think St. Paul's Joan, we're bringing them in to perform for us.
Yep.
Why can't we bring them in to be a part of the community? And that's where I think you almost have to have, as you say, some kind of an administrator who can sort of blend or help blend that. I don't see it working without being, Holden and not being black or white.
But I think the problem is precisely that Holden isn't either black and white. Holden
it's white. It's Nordic white. You better
right,
be
I,
right.
Yeah.
It's not pluralistic white.
No.
It's probably middle class.
Upper middle class Nordic.
Intellectual.
White. That's right.
Well, even within our own church, to be able to come this distance takes a certain amount.
It takes money.
And to be able to take the amount of time off from work, and to be able to volunteer out here, you almost have to be a teacher who has a summer off, or a student who's family don't depend on them to earn money over that summertime.
Right.
So, of course, you're set up
or the other.
You've excluded a lot of people right there because of the very location of the place.
Or the other point is the mailing list. I helped stamp, put those on one time. Saw an awful lot of Lutheran churches on that nationally. Not too many Baptists Methodists or whatever type. And I think, you know, Holden's idea of getting away from, you know, being an adult retreat center and trying to get the different churches, not so much Lutheran. I think we'll be working towards that area also. Well, eventually, hopefully, something will gel from that. But a little bit more mailing list to different.
But if I were a black person, and knowing what whites have done to black for centuries, I would be very leery about any group of whites, you know, saying, come on, we want to learn from you. I mean, I don't even know if I want to teach you anything, you know. I mean, I don't even know if, I don't know what you're, what is it in there, you know, what is it you're going to use me for? Or, you know, you know, if I were a black, goodness, it would, I would really go, you know, approach it with much, you know, hesitation and questioning what are their motives and, because what has been their experience for the last 4 centuries?
Most everything they do is guarded, I would imagine, with apprehension, but.
One of the helpful things is that, telling you, is that they are bicultural. They live in 2 worlds. Mm-hmm. We don't. We live in 1. And they understand, you know, and I say it's the grace of God if they come. It's not because, you know, anything else. I think the grace of God leads them to grab you and hug you when you come into the church, even though you're part of the group that has oppressed them for so long. And if they come, I see that as their willingness to live biculturally, say, okay, we'll be doing Whitey's thing here, and we'll even teach them some things, and but you know, don't know how much. And no, I think they'll be holding back sometimes and doing all of that, that which happens naturally because you live biculturally.
It's called survival.
Yeah, well, for sure. And I think it's called the grace of God that they still can love the people who symbolically and in real ways has been the oppressor.
I think only 2% of blacks in the United States have non-Caucasian blood, something like that. Because I think we forget about the fact that it's really, there's a Caucasian part of it. I mean, you know, you take most black people, you start looking into what their family origins are, and they'll identify their white relatives somewhere down the line. So it's not really, you know, you said bicultural, yeah. So it's not just a black experience. It's also, they have white relatives.
Particularly black folks, I think, who have relationships with mainstream Protestant denominations, like many of the folks coming up in the next 2 weeks, move constantly in 2 worlds. You know, we'll see, I think we'll probably see lots of examples of that, speaking in King's English one moment, and then Northern white, Northern European English in one moment, and then, you know, down home street stuff. You know, the folks love to play with that stuff, and will put us on constantly about it, which will be great fun. You know, that you remind me, I mean, we go back to basics all the time, and you remind me of what a fiction race is.
Yeah.
At its base. And how, what, you know, or another thing to say about that, or how like South Africa we are, mm-hmm. where the lines have been drawn so tightly around racial identity. Mm-hmm. Unlike, for instance, the Caribbean, right, where race goes across a spectrum that has no clear lines that go from lighter to darker to darker to darker. I mean, we really are quite exceptional in the way we think about race and have historically in the United States. Where it doesn't make any difference if that 98% of black people have Caucasian blood. It makes no difference culturally in terms of who they are racially. Mm-hmm.
I said the other night that it's that being that some of my friends are coming up this weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it. I happen to have some good black friends there. And I hope that some of the people I have coming up that I don't know will become friends. And especially I hope that whoever of you are here will be making friends with these people and picking up some people to relate to for a longer period of time, because that's part of the process too. Because the more people that know people here, they're going to be suggested for positions and all the other kind of stuff to ease out and ease in the people that should be. So I hope you're heading for some friendships.
And picking up relationships and projects for the world down there.
Amen.